accession number 23100, reel 1.
Are you originally from Dundee?
Yes, I was born just in the north side of Dundee. Before the war, I'm a pre-war baby, you see.
What was the date?
9th April, 1913. And in 2 weeks' time, I'll be in my 90th year.
And your father, was he in business?
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
He was in business. He started off in Dundee, was headhunted to Glasgow, was then headhunted back to Dundee to become assistant manager of the largest store in Dundee, private store, D.M. Brown's, and it was set up in 1881, and the general manager was a man called McEwen, my father was his assistant. When D.M. Brown died in 1933, we were already involved in what had become the Scottish Drapery Corporation. But this goes back to, do you know Hattrey? Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah.
Clarence Hattrey? Clarence Hattrey was the whiz kid of the 1920s. A brilliant mind, was far-flung ideas, far beyond the scope that was possible. He had set up in England the Drapery Trust, which included Demerance. And he came north to Dundee, and he tried to amalgamate all the jute businesses. Dundee was Jutopolis, and Dundee owned India. Some other Tettiger jute mills were all owned by Dundee mill owners. And Hattrey came up with this idea in the 1920s that they could all be amalgamated into jute industries. And he persuaded the workers too, the ordinary bobbin minders and others, to invest their savings in this new, to become participants in their businesses. And of course the thing failed. And a lot of these poor souls were left in poverty. And before this actually happened, he had evolved the idea of setting up a similar drapery trust in Scotland. And he went and persuaded the managing director of Pettigrew's in Glasgow to sell up to Hattrey. And he went to Edinburgh and saw the boss of Patrick Thompson's, who didn't like the idea very much, went to Aberdeen, saw Alec Water Wharton Grant's, one of the stores there, rather on the lines of Daly's of Glasgow, a slightly upmarket, and Alec Watt was half persuaded, came to Dundee, met my father, McEwen and D.M. Brown. My father said he was a charming man, and on one occasion his wife came with him. Charming personality, and had this grandiose idea of setting up this drapery trust in Scotland, the Scottish Drapery Trust, with those stores, 7 of them all together. And D.M. Brown, after he'd left, said, "I don't trust that man now, he's left my room." And he managed to inveigle Patrick Thompson's in Edinburgh, Wharton Grant's in Aberdeen, to come to form a little consortium and to buy back from Hattrey the Pettigrew and Stevens business, paying 15 shillings for the 5 shilling shares. And the Scottish Drapery Corporation was set up, but Hattrey retained a 51% holding with no voting rights, no superior voting rights. And that ran quite satisfactorily until D.M. Brown died, and then my father and McEwen continued to run the business right through the war years. And it was through that that I began to realise my father had never actually asked me to come into business, but there were indications that he hoped I would. I was studying for the Colonial Department.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school at a place called Harris Academy in Dundee, founded in 1881 also. There were two main schools in Dundee. Dundee High School, dating back, they claim, to the days of Wallace, William Wallace. They say he went to the Dundee High School for a wee while, which is, it's a good story. I don't think Hollywood heard about that, otherwise we would have had it in the film. But there were two schools, Harris Academy and the high school, and then down in Broughty Ferry, Grove Academy. They were all fee-paying schools. And I went to the Harris, where they stressed languages.
Did you have a skill at languages? Did you have a gift?
I learned them. We were taught by a little wee man, barely 5 feet, who, as a very young man, had been in Germany just before war broke out and was interned through the war years, came back and was appointed language master in the Harris Academy in the 1920s. And Johnny Monroe was his name, and he was a good teacher, but he insisted that we entered every examination possible. There were two education departments in Dundee, Dundee Educational Trust, Dundee Education Authority, and they set their own examinations, apart from the what we call the hires, equivalent to A-levels now, hires and lowers, and they set examinations for anybody to enter. Also the RSA, the Royal Scottish Academy, the Royal Society of Arts, they set up examinations as well. Chamber of Commerce set up competitions rather than examinations, and we were forced to sit these to get certificates, which we prized, of course. And I was also, we were the first school to offer a course in Spanish. And by then, I had an aunt who had married an early boyfriend, who by then was finance director of the largest ranchers in the Argentine. And she went out to the Argentine in 26 and married there. And I took up Spanish in 1926 and added Spanish to my French and German.
Did you go and visit any of these countries?
Not till later on. I did go to Germany in 1933 and was arrested by the Waffen-SS and held for 2.5 days.
What had you done to deserve this?
What had I done? I had gone with a fellow student of mine from Newburgh along the road there, tall chap, 6'3", and we were going to do a bicycle tour of Europe. This was in 1933, just after Hitler had come to power in the January. And my mother was a bit chary of her wee boy doing a 4,000-mile cycle run through Europe. But we pursued the idea, and I persuaded my uncle, who I said yes, he was a motor engineer in the old engineering term, persuaded him to consider welding two bicycles side by side, because being the lower, the shorter of the two, I'd be the one in the front of a tandem, and I'd do the pedalling, and Mac at the rear would just let his feet go round. So I persuaded my uncle to draft out welding two bicycles together, work out a steering geometry in which both handlebars turned at the same angle, and at the back we would sling a frame on a one-wheel frame on which we'd put a wooden box containing all our impedimenta, tent and everything else. And when this was all discussed in great detail at home, my mother got cold feet, persuaded my father to buy a motor car, and I got a 920 Humber four-seater Tourer, and we did 4,000 miles on that. We sailed from Harwich on an eight-hour journey to Flushing, arrived in Holland. We had met, we'd been accosted by a young English girl on the boat who'd noticed that we'd changed money quite easily. The purser's desk was on the top deck, and it was a lovely day. We were sailing quite quietly. We'd had a bite of lunch on board, and this girl was on her own sitting across from us, and she saw us change money. She came across, excuse me, but you've just changed money. Would you tell me how to do that? Because I've never done this. I'm going to visit friends, old school friends in Tilburg in Holland. So we went across and showed how to change money. And we said, you're going to Tilburg. We're going through Tilburg. We'll give you a lift. We says, can't do that because my friend Ietje van den Berg Krabbendam, is meeting me at was landing at Rotterdam, and she's meeting me at a station en route with the car. So I have no means of contact with her, so I'm sorry, I have to turn down your offer of lift, but I do insist that you stop off at Tilburg, because my friends have a large estate there, and I'm sure Herr von, Van den Berg von Krabbendam will allow you to put up your tent in the ground somewhere. So we said, well, Mike and I discussed this. After she'd gone off the ship, we'd all disembarked. Well, we'll go to Tobol, because after all, we don't know where the devil we're going. And well, we got there to find that there'd been a hold up on the trains. And this girl, Pat Gow, from Kirkstone, Heathside Park, Woking, hadn't turned up, because Itchy had to wait for the arrival of this held-up train. And we arrived out of the blue, saying, oh, we're friends of Pat Gow. However, the father and mother and two other sisters were there, and they welcomed us in and said, you must come in. And we said, well, the reason we called is that Pat said that we might be able to set up the tent somewhere out of sight of the house. And you can't set up your tent on my grounds. You will sleep here in the house. We said, oh, we couldn't consider that. So one shaven, dirty type said, well, you'll sleep in Pat's room, which is a double room, and Pat will sleep with Lydia, her old school friend. They did turn up, and we had quite a pleasant evening. The next day, we were up early. Also was the boss himself and his wife. The girls were late sleepers. We were given breakfast, and we were sort of dispatched on our way. We went into Tobog and spent the morning there looking around the old place, and we came across the three girls, the four girls, because they were all there together. We had another cup of coffee with them and went on our way. We went to Köln and passed through Aachen, went to Köln, we looked over Köln, had a wonderful time looking over the place, went into a Gasthaus for a bite of lunch, and there were three men sitting over there in the corner talking German. The waiter came around and said, what do you want? You're from the old country, aren't you? And we said, yes. He said, so am I. He said, yeah. He was a Cockney. And he talked God blimey and all the rest of it, too bloody likely. And he came back and he said, these gentlemen over there would like you to join them for lunch. And they paid our lunch. And they were old soldiers. And one had a smattering of English. And we had a very pleasant time with them, what with our German and their smattering of English. We had a pleasant time. We were very impressed by this friendliness of the Germans. And we then went on, went round the Altstadt, and sometime after 4 or 5 o'clock, when we were going south, and we were wondering where we were going to camp, we had in mind to find a forest off the main road somewhere and pull the car in and set up tent. But we're going through the outskirts of Köln on the south side, we came across a Grüner Polizist in green uniform with silver flogging across his chest. So we stopped and we said, we are going south, we are two Scottish students on a tour of Germany. We would like to find a camping place where we could camp. Oh, he said, where are you going? Well, we're going down, going to Black Forest. Oh, yes, I said, we're going to Black Forest. Yes, all right. It's a long way away, but 20 kilometres from here, you come to a small town called Rodenkirch. Understand? Small town called Rodenkirch. When you come to the town Zeichen, the signs outside the town, pass through those, and 100 metres, you will come to a road on the right. It says Zum Strand. Turn to the right, go down that road as far as you can to the river, you know, Father Rhine, understand, and turn left. When you've passed the outskirts of the village, it's just a small track, there's a great meadow, a visa, in front of you, and you can camp anywhere there you like, but make sure you go beyond the limits of the village, and you'll find ample space. We found all this, and we passed the limits of the village, left behind on our left here, and we drew up, and the Rhine was about 20 feet below us, and we're looking around and we said, oh, we'll go over that wee hillock there and then maybe find a space there. And just as we were about to start up the car again, four men came from the strand down below, Waffen-SS. Papier! Astonished. Where are you from? Who are you? Why the hell are you here? And we said, well, we're two Scottish students, we're on a tour of Germany, and we've been told we can camp. You can't camp here, it's verboten. We said, well, we spoke to a Grüner Polizist in Köln who assured us we can camp on the visa outside Rodenkirch. Can't get out, it's forbidden. At one point, one drew his pistol. Come with us. And two stood on each side of the car on the running board, and he directed us beyond the little hillock we were going to cross. And down there was what was obviously a little barrack shed. They took us down there. They took us in to see their commandant. I was wearing a kilt with the dirk in my stocking. Offensive weapon. Took that from me. I said, so that's part of my uniform. They didn't take our papers. They took our passports, but they didn't do anything about it. My route was in the car. They didn't ransack the car because it gave a detailed route. We were going right through Germany, Austria, Hungary, back to Italy, into Switzerland, back home through France. They didn't ransack the car. They did take all our stuff out of the back, which were under a tonneau cover, so the car was empty of our belongings. And after a long conversation about how this was forbidden area and so on, we were given a room which had a corridor that was locked behind us, and there was a bathroom toilet available also. They gave us a meal, but we were under guard, malcontents. We weren't malcontents, but we were under guard. In the morning, we were hauled before the commandant, and he said, we're going to take you up to Köln. I said, we spent all day yesterday in Köln. We've said, you haven't seen our part of Köln. We're going to take you to the communist part of Köln, and that is very dangerous. So we went off. Wallace sat in front with me. Two men sat in the back, pistols and all. And he took us up to Köln. And as we came to the communist part, there were one man on each side of the running board standing as we drove through this part with pistols at the ready. It was a hairy business, I can tell you. And then they gave us lunch, and they took us to the offices of the Westdeutsche Beobachter, the great West German newspaper, whose editor at the time was Julius Streicher. And he interrogated us in a friendly enough way, and then he said, now, I want you to write your experience of Germany and your opinions of Germany. The new Germany, Nazi Germany. We said, well, we can't do that. We've only arrived here yesterday. We've seen Köln. We've seen the inside of your barrack room at Rodenkirch. And that's all. We have no opinion. Or what opinion we have is not awfully favourable. I mean, we were quite peeved by this time. And I said, what we will do, sir, is we're going down to the Black Forest. And we're going to see what's to be seen in the Black Forest, but we want to see the little church at Wies, de Wies, you know, that tiny, tiny church in the Schwangau. And I said, what we'll do is, after we've done that on our way back, we could give you a real opinion of Germany, because we'll have seen it by then. We're going to Rothenburg up der Tauber as well. He accepted that. And we were taken back to the barrack room. We were locked up again overnight, and we were released the following afternoon.
Do you think they thought that you were spies?
This is difficult to answer, Mark. All I'll tell you is that our custom was to find a forest somewhere off the main track. Of course, there were only waterbound surfaces in those days, way back 1933. There was no autobahn. They were all narrow tracks. And find a little side road off the beaten track, set up the tent, and overnight among the trees. The first night we were well south, and we found just exactly the kind of wood we wanted to use. We hauled the car through the trees, and we just set the fire. Hadn't lit it, but we set the fire with twigs and had got out our cooking utensils. And through the wood came a tall man, middle-aged man, probably in his 40s, in black riding boots and black breeches, and he stopped. Good evening, gentlemen. Where are you from? We explained the story, and he had a long chat with a very pleasant fellow, very pleasant indeed. And he said that he was a Leutnant der Reserve. Now, Germany didn't have an army, wasn't allowed an army, and Germany didn't have a reserve either, but he was a Leutnant der Reserve. And he gave us his card with his name. that was our first sort of sight of officialdom, because this, what was this chap doing walking through the woods just when we were setting up a, this is hard to believe. The next night we went to the outskirts of Augsburg. Again, we were in a little wood, and who should come through the wood but a man in lederhosen and a cap with a beaver brush in it. And where are you from? Where are you going? Usual story. He said, I am the mayor of Augsburg. I invite you to come to my office tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock and I will give you a real tour of the Alte Stadt Augsburg. I will see you tomorrow. Well, we didn't. We backed up very early in the morning and beat it. And we did the Black Forest. And did all that we wanted to, and we were on our way to Austria. We got as far as Rosenheim, short of the frontier. Linz is the first town on, but we went to the Chiemsee, the lake at Rosenheim, and went and visited the two castles, Ludwig II's castles. We'd seen the Schwangau and the Hohenschwanstein. These were the two gems, which were copies of Versailles. These were versions of Versailles. One was the Schloss Herrenchiemsee, the larger of the two, and the Schloss Frauenchiemsee was the smaller of the two. Lovely places. We hired a boat, rowed out to the islands, and came back and had a snack, and we spent the afternoon there. We were going to make for Austria, and we thought, oh no, we'll have a little longer here, and we spent longer than we should have. But we left about 7 o'clock or so, making for the Austrian border, but going off as to a suitable wood, little incline up to the place, and we just hauled the car in and had set the fire and had actually just lit the fire. We were up on a kind of knoll and there was a little village down here ahead of us, down below, and we'd only just lit the fire when rifle shots rang out. And without a word of a lie, we heard bullets whistling through the trees. I can't expect you to accept this.
Oh, I do.
But we jumped on the fire immediately. We hauled a blanket out of the back of the car, covered up the radiator, the headlamps, the screen, everything, and we couldn't get the car out because there was a very commotion down in the village and vehicles were moving to a central point. And we couried down behind a wee bank, hoping the car would be sufficiently masked not to cast reflections. And what I can only describe as the later brine gun carrier type of vehicle came up. Now, they didn't have any military vehicles, but this was a military vehicle. Driver, two men in the back, and a man standing at the windscreen with a gun in his hand. They passed by the wood. I can't think why they didn't search the wood, but they passed by the wood, down the slope, and we listened to the engine until it was out of earshot. We manhandled the car back, pushed it to the slope, and freewheeled down, and made as fast as possible for the border. We got there just before the border closed at 9 o'clock, and we got across into Germany to a little village called Lietzen, and that night we put up in a gasthouse. In the morning, we came out to breakfast. The in-harbour was sitting at the table. There were two waitresses serving. One was standing at the window. He was reading the newspaper. She was standing at the window. The other one served us. He bade us good morning. And we slept well, yes, we slept quite nicely, reading the newspaper. And we spoke among ourselves. We took our breakfast. And the other girl served us. The other one kept at the window. And suddenly he said, yeah, they'll come, June. They'll come. The man put the paper, folded quickly, shoved it up the chimney. Said to us, you've not seen a newspaper. There has been no newspaper, understand? This is quite serious. You've not seen a newspaper, understand? And we just, policeman came in, looking for the morning newspaper. The patron said, it's not here yet. He said, you must have had it. I said, I haven't seen it, I'm waiting for it. And they had an argument starting. And we beckoned the girl quickly and got her rechno. Got out quickly. We loaded the car already when we came down to breakfast. It was only a wee pack we had, and we were ready to beat it. We beat it. And further on, we did buy a newspaper. There was a spy scare in Rosenheim on the Chiemsee the night before in Germany. And this was reported in the local newspaper, and were confiscating the newspapers.
Your experiences in Germany would suggest that the Germany that you perhaps expected was not the one you got. I mean, had you read much about the Nazis? Did you know?
I knew this much about the Nazis, that in 1932 there was a German Austauschdienst student came to St. Andrews, little short man, tubby little fellow, called Otto Wagner. Not a very pleasant fellow. He came on this exchange scholarship. He stayed with us for a year, and Otto talked about Germany. His father was one of the troops managers, and to our surprise, well, to go back a little further, I became quite friendly with him, and he came and visited my parents in Dundee, and on this second visit, he came over for a weekend, and my father was in, we went down for coffee with my father, and two men came in. One was the proprietor of a big motor hiring business in Dundee, W.P. Robertson, and my father introduced this German chap, who's a friend of my son's, nice chap, and we sat down and we had a chat, and W.P. said, do you know Scotland at all? No. He said, look, I'm going up north with my friend, two friends of mine, next weekend. If you like to come with us, we'll take you on a wee tour up to Loch Abber. And they did. They put him up, they all put up in the Kinlochleggan Inn in those days. It's out of commission now, but the inn at Kinlochleggan, and gave Otto a wonderful time. He was a very impressive little man, wee tubby chap. To our surprise, he was given a second year at St. Andrews, which was very unusual. Then he went back to Germany, and then 1936, I think it was, I had a note from Otto that he had been given a post in London to teach German in London schools, and he was living in Diggs there, and I went down. When my father went to business, sometimes he asked me to run him down if I was on holiday. And we met up with Otto, and he was doing quite nicely, teaching German. And Otto had a second year, 1937, and again he went back to Germany and came back 1938 through to 1939. And by this time I was actually in Bristol, and I was in touch with Otto. And I was going up to Germany, up to London in July, and I'd been in touch with her and said, can we meet? And it was arranged we'd meet and we'd have a chat. And the day before I was to leave Bristol, I got a telegram saying that Otto had been recalled to Germany. War broke out in September. And I remember Otto was staying with us the time, the weekend when Hitler came to power. Surge of Nazism, and my father came down in the morning with breakfast, and my father had listened to the wireless. Mr. Hitler has not quite gained the majority in your elections. What will happen now? To our great surprise, Otto said, oh, he will just shoot the other members of the other parties. That was Otto's view. But that was what I knew about Germany before we went there. We met Otto, we met him. He was in the University of Marburg, studying with a man called, what was his name? Luchert. And we picked them both up. He put us up in his bunk in Marburg for 3 days. And on the Sunday, we ran him and his friend down to Bad Nauheim, for a Sunday afternoon, listening to the band.
So you must have been rather pleased to have got out of Germany. Then you went into Austria. Then you went to...
We didn't go to hungry because we had an argument. I'm a cautious sort of chap, and I tended to keep bread 3 or 4 days. And we also bought ham, and if we didn't eat all the ham today, I would keep it for tomorrow, and this didn't suit Wallace. So we had a bit of an argument. He was the Chancellor, so he had the money. And in those days, we carried money belts, and where it was pound notes. No traveller's cheques, pound notes. We took, each of us, £30. Wallace gave me £6 to cover the costs of the car over the ferry and his own fare, so a return fare for both. And so he'd only £24, and I'd £36. But we had an argument about this, and I think we saw it to hell. Bloody silly doing this. And we cut out Hungary, but we did go to Austria, to Italy, and we'd had quite a tour in Italy.
Was there, given the fact that that was under a fascist dictator as well, did you...